Welcome. You're listening to the Internet Advisor Podcast with your co-hosts, Gary Baker, Foster Brown, and their team of experts. Since 1998, this program has been helping people like you with your computer problems, introducing you to valuable resources and programs, and promoting tech businesses in our area. The Internet Advisor is a two-hour radio program heard weekly on WJR 760 AM in Detroit and across the state on the Michigan Talk Network. Now, here are your hosts with this week's Internet Advisor.
Welcome to the Internet Advisor, your place for answers to your computer questions since 1998, with your co-hosts Gary Baker and Foster Brown and their team of tech experts. The door is always open at InternetAdvisor.net, on Facebook, and through Twitter. But right now it's time to get you in touch with your helpful hosts on this week's edition of Internet Advisor.
Welcome to the Internet Advisor. Hi, I'm Foster Brown, and we have got a great program lined up here for the St. Paddy's Day weekend. Some of you may hear it at other times, but we're delighted. We're green with envy about all the things we have to talk about today. We're going to be talking about the new shift in Amazon pricing for Amazon Prime. We'll be talking about the 25th anniversary of the World Wide Web, and we'll talk about a great organization gathering new leaders for us called My Lead. All that coming up on the Internet Advisor. Once again, welcome to the Internet Advisor, where for now over 16 years, we've been trying to give you some good advice about your computers and also bring you and put you in touch with some very interesting people to give us perspective on things that are happening on the World Wide Web. As a matter of fact, we're going to be blowing our horns and passing some of the virtual cake around for the 25th anniversary, Gary.
That's right. Can you believe 25 years? And some people, like my kids will say, what do you mean 25? The web's been around forever. And in their short life, it has.
That's right.
And all of us remember those days when we didn't have it.
Matter of fact, we have Mike Amon coming on with us from San Jose, California. We're delighted to have him as a guest. He's originally from the from Ann Arbor, from that area.
Grew up in Jackson, and I met him in Ann Arbor. We started online tech together, the very first internet service provider doing basically developing websites and all that.
Yeah, you just kind of jumped on the World Wide Web shortly after it began. And also, Ed Riddell in-house here. Getty, good to see you here.
So good to be here. I was doing mainframes at the time,
The
web was starting.
Real computing.
Who wanted to mess with those PCs? That's something we did in the 80s.
They were called micros, remember?
That's interesting. And then, boy, was I wrong.
We also have with us Mr. Rick Broida. I'm glad to have him here, our noted gadget guy and also the cheapskate extraordinaire. How you doing, Rick?
I'm great, Foster. Good to be here.
Hey, one of the reasons we asked you to be here is because of a big news item that came out, at least for those of us who are Amazon Prime members, kind of took our breath away a little bit. But you, as the person who knows the really good deals out there, we wanted to get you on to evaluate this change for Amazon from their $79 a year for their Prime service, now bumping it up to effectively $100 or $99, et cetera. You know the aim. Essentially going from $80 to $100 for the service. And I wanted to find out from you, from your perspective, you wrote an article on this, which I found really interesting, and we're going to link to it. Is this still a good deal, do you think, even though Amazon has done its price bump?
Well, I do. Short answer is yes. I still think it's a good deal. Amazon Prime is kind of an odd duck when you think about it, because it combines two completely disparate things, and that being the free upgrade to two-day shipping, which if you shop online a lot, and especially you shop at Amazon a lot, is really fantastic. It's kind of actually changed the way I shop a bit. But the other half of the coin is their streaming service, which is kind of a Netflix competitor. Mm-hmm. And so, they give you unlimited access to TV shows and movies, and they actually, in the last year or so, have rounded up some exclusives, shows that you can't find on Netflix. So,
Rick, name a few of those, if you can, off the top of your head, because they're kind of interesting.
Yeah, so there's Justified, which is a favorite of mine. Mm-hmm. The Shield, which is an older show, but just a great cop show. And most recently, they added Orphan Black, which is this great BBC series that has been growing in popularity and, again, not available for free streaming anywhere else.
And that has been the key. With Prime membership, you get to watch a lot of that stuff free. Not all of it, but a lot of that stuff comes to you free. And I've also found, as a Netflix subscriber, that they very often will have other seasons of things that I've watched on Netflix that I'm delighted to be able to find there.
Rick, I think that I think that if people thought that it was a good deal at $79, $20 more just isn't going to matter, is it?
I would tend to agree, and I think that really when you crunch the numbers, I mean, at $79, you know, you break it down, it's like $680 something, $6 and change mm-hmm. per month, which is really a steal. Even Netflix is a steal at $7.99 a month. In fact, I'll go ahead and just make my prediction now that before the year is out, Netflix will almost certainly hike their rates as well, because it's almost too good a deal.
I mean,
they could easily charge more and get away with it. I think Amazon realized that for what they're offering, I mean, the shipping aspect of it alone, I don't know how they're able to,
I don't either.
to do that and still make money.
But I'm delighted
I mean,
that
they're $5. Yeah, you can order a $5 item and have it delivered in 2 days. I mean, the cost of the shipping is more than the than what they're making on the item by far. So $99, still a steal.
You know, Bezos, who Jeff Bezos, who was the guy that founded Amazon, his principle was always kind of to, what's the financial term for it, short sell himself? In other words, he sells this at way below his cost.
That's right, and use it as a loss leader, and then he'll he'll sell you other things, and that was really the it's the bundle of stuff that he can sell.
And you were talking to me too about buying a heavier piece of equipment. It was a heater, I think.
Yeah,
and you were saying that you I should order it for you, and then because
it's
of having a Prime membership.
It's always good to know someone that has a Prime membership. You know, but one thing I was curious about.
Pay them the $20.
You know, if I become a Prime member myself, is a red flag going to go up basically saying that I have to start paying my web taxes? Because I just filled out my Michigan State tax return and it's like, you
cost
know,
me $83 this year.
I was going to say, you know, it's up to you on the honor roll system basically to disclose how much you purchased on the web.
Right. And so the internet sales tax issue, I think, is going to continue. I mean, they're already doing it, I think, in New York and some other states. It's probably just a matter of time before we're all paying internet sales tax as opposed to doing it on the honor system, which I'm sure. You know, many of us are not. Now, of course, I always pay my taxes for any IRS officials who may be listening. But,
that's Broida, B as in boy.
Well, and Rick, you know, actually, Cal asked me a couple weeks ago if I did that. And I said, can you imagine if they could catch the guy on the radio talking about internet didn't pay his use tax?
Yeah.
And so I always do. Like I told, that cost me $83 this year. But it's still, it's something. We're all supposed to pay.
And I think it's only fair in many ways. Rick, we're going to jump out of here kind of quickly. I'm glad you could join us for this. We're looking forward to having you very soon to talk about some of the great gadgets that are out there. And by the way, folks, I link in our Internet Advisor Facebook page to a great geek versus geek battle that Rick was involved in. Please go to the Internet Advisor Facebook page and enjoy that too. Rick, thanks so much for being here. I don't know if you had your own little celebration or marked it on your calendar carefully. Matter of fact, Ed Riddell was teasing me. Didn't it just pop up on my calendar? From the year 1989 when the World Wide Web came into existence. And to help us to take a look back, there's somebody who was definitely here at that time. Mike Amon is with us from San Jose, California. Mike, thank you so much for joining us.
Hey, Foster, it's great to hear your voice. It's sunny out here in sunny California.
Well, we're matching you here in Detroit, in Southeast Michigan right now.
Yeah, very sunny.
Fortunately.
And Mike, I think Foster just called you old. I just wanted to say that on the record.
Listen, we are all old. As a matter of fact, there were three people in the studio here who were either, two of whom were born after 1989 and one who was born the year before. Matter of fact, that's when my grandchildren began coming around and being part of our family. But Mike, I want to talk with you because you were there at the beginning of the World Wide Web. Let's go through some things kind of basically for our audience. Why is this whole thing about the World Wide Web so important? Isn't it the Internet?
Well, no, it's a variation on the Internet. The Internet is many, many, many things. And when we started online technology with Gary, we were on the Internet, but we were not on the World Wide Web. The World Wide Web came along when browsers came along, and when the browser came along, which everybody uses every day, and there's several out there still, and everyone was worried that that one would dominate. But we had to change our whole business model when the first browser came on.
So, excuse me,
and the first the first browser that could actually display graphics, right?
Because there were
that was all text based before.
Even when
from 1990 till about 93, before Mosaic came out, it was all text based, and he created a browser to browse, you know, text based files, but they had hypertext links within the files.
Okay,
it wasn't like Gopher and some of the other technologies that had been around for a long time before that, where you could go from page to page, but you couldn't go from inside a document to another page.
Okay, this is what I want to try to separate out for us, because I've been trying to sort it out myself, because the web and the internet for me are, you know, World Wide Web and the internet are kind of interchangeable. They're all one and the same thing, because that's all practically that I've been using. You guys were using other aspects of before. Is it a fair analogy, Mike, to say that the internet is kind of like the superhighway that's out there that goes from coast to coast and from different parts of the country, and that the World Wide Web was the vehicle to get people around that? That was the significance of what Berners-Lee did?
Oh, yes. And as Gary was saying, the ability to start to put GIF or images up along with text was a dramatic change. And it changed every day. I would call up the first browser, and we used to have, there was one of the first sites was a roulette wheel.
just to prove
just
the concept.
Picture of a right. roulette wheel that would come up, and you would click on the roulette wheel, and it would spin you out into the internet, and up would come some type of web page, and you'd look at it, and you'd go, wow. And so what was happening around the world, usually on university campuses or startups, was the fact that people were looking at each other and what they were doing in a 24-hour cycle and going one better. You have to understand that group discussions back then had no graphics, and mm-hmm. it took at least 24 hours or more to transfer all these messages that would go around the world, literally,
wow.
and collect these messages, and they were groups, they were private groups. Now, all of a sudden, you were just released to communicate with email, and then with the World Wide Web, finally, you had email in the browser, and just the full integration of services that we have today is just amazing.
So we had like Elm and Pine, which were email readers at mm-hmm. that time,
yeah.
but were not integrated with a lot of the other activities. We had a Gopher system.
There wasn't kind of a Conver language.
Right. And the group discussions were all Usenet news groups, and you had to have different servers for different parts of the functions that you could
and
use
so
on the internet.
What Tim Berners-Lee, Tim Berners-Lee did in 1989 was to create a common language, a different function
right.
that allowed you to
right.
see all these other ones.
So you used the HTML and the HTTP functionality to create, and then you could use hypertext links, again, inside the document. That was mm-hmm. the difference between that and, say, a Gopher document.
Let me get really stupid, not stupidly, but very, very basic. HTTP, when we see an address,
right.
or URL, a universal...
resource locator. Yeah,
okay.
Resource locator
so
is URL.
He created a HTTP stood for what?
Hypertext Transfer Protocol.
Okay, and that was what he created, was a protocol for treat for
right.
and then you have the colon after that, two lines, and then the www was the World Wide Web.
Right, because if you wanted, say, file transfer protocol, it was FTP colon.
And you can still do that, FTP, right?
And if you wanted Gopher, it would be Gopher colon.
Okay.
So and these were all Usenet news groups were Usenet, you know, Usenet.
Nowadays though, isn't it true, Mike, Ed, please chime in too. We don't use the www anymore in most of our browsers. We just
people think they're synonymous because
yeah,
we don't
right.
use a lot of the other functionality.
Right.
It's been superseded now with the web.
And some of you, if you have, go ahead, Ed.
I was just too young back then.
And you still are.
So, okay, because I wanted to break this down for our listeners. As you said, for us, it's transparent nowadays. We just don't even think of these things. Matter of fact, I think I saw Berners-Lee saying something about, he said, I wish I hadn't put the HTTP up front in there in the terms of addresses or the URLs. We really could dust that off, except if you're looking for a secure link, you want to see that S,
right.
HTTPS.
If you didn't put that, then you wouldn't know which big server it would be going to. You wouldn't take it to the right server. It might go to, say, an FTP. Well, it wouldn't go to the FTP server. It wouldn't go to any place.
So,
was the way to get it to the right protocol.
So we really began to see what are called, is it GUI, the graphic user interfaces, where we could see the web, the rest of us, until about the mid-90s, 93, 94, in that area?
Right. The Mosaic came out in 93.
Mosaic was one of the first ones.
Okay. It was a federal grant given to the University of Illinois on Urbana campus, and it was led by Mark Andreessen, who Mike and I know. So,
and he went on to found
Netscape.
Netscape.
He founded Netscape in April of 94.
And that's the one that introduced me when I came on. Right. Netscape was the first one I remember getting on and following.
That was April 94 is when they started, and it came out in August.
AOL was also big at that time, wasn't it?
And they were not using, and again, that was a walled garden, using the Internet Protocol. It was a bulletin board.
And didn't also the Internet Explorer by Microsoft come in somewhere close to this time?
No, was late.
Was that later?
Late, 95, because it came integrated with Windows 95.
Windows 95, and then there were part of the problems part of the problems they got into trouble with the government over
bundling
those things together. That when you got the 95 system, you also got the Internet Explorer. Mike, there's so much to talk about here that we really don't have time, but there's a lot of discussions that have been going on this week. I just wanted to help people to understand that what Berners-Lee created with the WWW, the World Wide Web, wasn't the Internet. The Internet had been around as a way of communicating. Quick look into the future.
So you know who really created the Internet? And I know everybody thinks it's Al Gore.
DARPA, wasn't it?
But Vint Cerf and Bob Kahn. Mm-hmm. And Mike, you know Vint.
Yep, sure do. Great, great guy. And, you know, a lot of that was the original Internet now is really what we're talking about. Mm-hmm. And networking computers together, that was all the early research, a lot of it defense funding. And when you look what we're doing today, it's just unbelievable. In 25 short years, and it's really not 25. I mean, the rapid change within the last 10.
Yeah, and things like Twitter aiding revolutions. Matter of fact, right now in the Ukraine and in Venezuela, where I lived for a number of years, key in Egypt, to the Arab Spring in many ways. Just astounding. Mike, hey, thanks so much for having been with us. I'm Mike Amon from San Jose, California. You're always good to help us out with this little history and also taking a brave look at the new world coming up as well. Thanks, Mike, for being with us. Look forward to having you on the air again soon with us.
Great. We'll see you guys. Take care.
All right.
Take care, Mike.
By the way, I'd like to remind you folks that InternetAdvisor.net, our homepage, has a whole host of resources, including the show notes from today, and they have some very valuable links in there that you'll be able to follow. Articles on, for instance, the 25th anniversary of the birth of the World Wide Web in 1989, and then links to other things like our next guests. And Gary, you've had some folks come to the studio here. We've had them in before in terms of talking with the organization. It's called My Lead. Why don't you introduce the folks who are in studio and tell a little bit about the organization?
Well, sure. This really actually started when I went to Flagstar Bank, and I happened to run across another person that was there on staff, and we got talking about, and she mentioned My Leads, and I said, you know, I think my daughter went to this big conference, and it's because of that connection that we got in touch with David Sweetman. David, welcome to the Internet Advisor.
Thank you for having us, Gary.
And you take and create this really great conference for rising juniors in high school up at Michigan State every year, and you do this with no paid staff and no office. You just do this all online. How do you do that?
Yep. Well, it's a lot of great work and a lot of motivated people who really are, motivated, inspired to help us out. So
tell us about My Leads. What is it?
So My Leads, we provide leadership development opportunities for high school sophomores with a special focus on community service.
Mm.
So it was FDR who said, we can't prepare our future for our youth, but we can prepare our youth for the future. And that's really what we're about in My Lead, really preparing our youth.
Kind of surfacing those kids who are, pardon me for referring to you, young people who have got potential and just need some way of encouraging to stand up and focus that potential.
Yep. And so our approach is we provide an outside of school leadership development immersion experience, 3 days long, statewide. Students from across the state participate, and we do this twice annually. We limit the number of students we have per school, and that first student from every school across the state, without cost to the school, without cost to the student, Miley does the fundraising to make that possible to have diverse participation.
How long has this been going on,
state.
Dave?
We had our first conference in 2003.
Wow, that is great. So you're working on 11th years now? This will be the 11th year of doing it. That's a stop. How many kids have you think you've studied, have you impacted through the program so far?
Directly, just over 2,500. Wow. But then the beauty of it is that indirect impact of that person from that high school that goes back to their community and the ripple from
And we're going to be talking with, matter of fact, a couple of young people who are in the studio right now. One is Ish Ajazuddin. I hope I got close to that one. And Ish, thank you very much for joining us. You're right now in high school at Lamphere, right?
Absolutely.
How long have you been involved with My Lead?
I joined My Lead 2 years ago. I was sent from my high school at the end of my sophomore year.
Cool. How did you find out about it, and what attracted you to it?
Well, a few of my teachers who I worked with through clubs at school said, hey, you'd be a good choice to send down there. And, well, when I got to My Lead, I mean, it's an immersive experience. So you come down there, there are some of the older students who went through the conference before. They say they bring a lot of energy. It's pretty overwhelming. But over the course of the weekend, you kind of learn to match that effort. And you go home after the conference and you say, you know, there are these people like David, like the other guys, Sam and Heather, who invest so much time, so much energy in giving you leadership skills and helping you develop. I mean, anyone can be a leader, but then...
Well, you said it's overwhelming. I remember taking my daughter up there and all of the people lining up as we drove in and the excitement that was created. And she couldn't wait to get out of the car.
That's Lauren.
This is Lauren. But I could see that being kind of intimidating, right? Yeah. Does that happen too with some of the kids?
Well, now I'm one of the ones who lines up, bang on the car door. There you go. We see a lot of kids who are a little reluctant to take their seatbelts off.
Yeah, I can imagine. The end of the conference, though, it is immersion. You really reach them, haven't you?
Absolutely.
What happened to you when you got back? What changed? What difference was there in you and what you did?
First of all, I learned some tangible leadership skills, things like working on delegation, actually listening to people, really listening to people. Yeah. And then more than that, I had a bit more motivation to go out in my community and do work. I said, with all the energy that people put into me, that invested in me, I have a duty to kind of pay it back. So I wanted to make sure I had an opportunity to do that and to represent Miley's name and to actually, I guess, make good on that investment.
Good. We have somebody else in the studio with us right now, Samantha Nedwi, who is at Henry Ford Community College, your third year there.
Yep.
So when did you first go? I mean, how many years ago was it you first went?
I went to 5 conferences, so it will be my 6th conference this year.
Okay. I asked the same question I asked of Ish before. What difference did it make to you?
You know, one of the biggest things we focus on for the weekend is coming out of your comfort zone. So really not being, you know, sometimes you feel like you can't be yourself. So when you go to this conference, you're in a non-judgmental zone and you feel like you can really do anything want.
What is the anything you did then?
There's so many different things. Even right now, I'm very nervous when it comes to stuff like this. So it's like even coming out of my comfort zone, knowing that I'm not going to be judged, or knowing that you know, whatever I say today, it's good. Just more impacting my life.
Yeah. Sure. And you're communicating something that's important, and other people will hear us and say, you know what? How do I get my kids interested in this? How do I get them involved?
Right.
And that's part of what this whole great big network of volunteers. I mean, you have to go to each school somehow and get the schools excited about nominating and sending people, right, David?
Yep, we work with hundreds of schools, and it's a monumental task, but we break it down to fundamentally, you have somebody like me who founds My Lead. Schools don't know me, but you have somebody like Sam, somebody like Ish, who went to that high school and can go back and say, hey, can you make sure that you send students from the school in the future?
Dave, you're the founder. Why? Why did you create My Lead?
Well, I can't take all the credit. I was one of the founders.
One of the founders.
But, so why do that? Because you look at the biggest potential for our great state, and it's in our youth, and it's in developing our youth and helping them realize their potential, and how can we best do that? And this seems like a
Were you a teacher? Is that where the background came from?
That. My background is varied. Yeah, teaching a bit. I'm actually in technology a bit too. Okay. So,
So was it kind of seeing the potential of technology and your desire to help kids stand up and become leaders those two things came together.
Yeah, well, the technology helps enable it. The technology by itself doesn't do anything. It's what we do with the technology. And really looking at seeing people's unmet potential and seeing how
I find it kind of interesting, Gary, as you look at their page, their mylead.org page, but as you say, it's kind of small in sense that there's not a lot of content that you see on there, but you do see the links. And that's what I found interesting. There's a ton of links across the bottom. Facebook, you've got Twitter, you've got a whole bunch, YouTube, a whole bunch. So it's kind of like you understand, that's the language that these young people are speaking.
And yeah, I would add too that it's interesting that depending on their age, there's different languages being spoken.
Yeah.
So we have some of our older cohorts that emails the way that we get in touch. We have somebody like from Ish's generation to say email so passe these days.
So Ish, what is it that's the main major communication tool that kids use and young people use in high schools?
Nowadays, we rely a lot on Twitter and Facebook.
Twitter and Facebook. Samantha, how about
you? Yeah, I agree with Facebook. We've made groups, you know, after the conference, and that's a main way of staying connected, is you'd make a Facebook group of our specific group that we're in for the whole weekend. So it's a good way to communicate back and forth.
We're going to talk a little bit more about the technology after we take a break for Mike Brennan and MyTech News coming up in a little bit. And Heather Lake, who is from Grand Valley College out in, or university rather, pardon me, in the Grand Rapids, where Ed's kids go as well. We're going to talk a little bit more about the technology behind this, so I don't want to take too much time on that. But I'm finding that you both talk about, did you talk about Facebook-ish as being one of the tools?
Yeah.
I heard that people your age are fleeing from Facebook.
Well, we have Twitter. We have a lot of other alternatives, Twitter, Instagram, many other things.
Snapchat?
Oh, yeah, definitely Snapchat.
Okay.
Yep, so
okay.
There are a lot of other means, but Facebook, it'll stick around.
I bring that up because I wonder, and this is a question for you too, Dave, how do you get the kids to get, my grandchildren are about that age, you know, and you go to a family gathering and everybody's got their thumbs flying on their phones, and I have a hard time saying, hey, come on, we're here, human beings are here, please put the phone down. How do you break them out of that loop and get them interacting with one another?
You have to have a really strong program, really strong facilitation that draw people out, that people want to do that. And if you force and say, hey, this is what we have to do, that's not going to work. But if it's something that people
you
want
can draw
to
so what to, draws them out, Ish? Go start with you. What drove you out?
Not sure. Well, you need some excitement. I mean, we love to share about ourselves, perhaps to an excess. But when you're there, when you're actually around real people, it is nice. I mean, technology is great, of course, but real human interaction, I think, when you have a high quality level of that, I think that does bring people out.
Sam, how about you?
I would say that I use at least Facebook more so, even just ways of communicating so we can get together. So that's where we post most of our events or most of what's going on, ways to get together and reunion, because we don't see these people because there's so many places apart.
Yeah, because distance. Dave, you know, I'm thinking that that's must be one of the biggest challenges is to get them out of the electronic world and into the real world in which they live to interact with it.
So when we bring folks together, that hasn't been a problem for us, but the technology is so important when we're scattered throughout the state to really keep us together.
But is there a ban on phones when you get together?
At our conferences, yes.
That's interesting. That is really interesting.
However, I have to say we're backing up on that a little bit because we found cameras. You know, people want to have memories of the experience, and now these days your phone is your camera, so you can't completely ban them.
And it's a completely immersive experience anyway. Yeah. People want to be there, right? Once they really get into it. That's why you go back, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
We're going to be continuing our conversation with David Sweepin, who is the president and one of the founders of MyLead.org. Again, you'll find a link for that on our homepage. And Heather Lake will be joining the conversation just a little bit later on. I'll talk about some of the practical tales of how you can get your young people involved. Just a moment. Mike Brennan. It's time for MITechNews.com, Michigan Technology News. And it's actually news from around the country and also around the state. And the man who helped us with that is Mr. Mike Brennan, who is our experienced editor of that. Mike, welcome this week.
Thank you, Foster. Always a pleasure.
Well, I know your first headline here is something going to be near and dear to all our hearts, and I guess we're all breathing a little bit of a sigh of relief. The governor, it looks like, is on his way to putting some money into our potholes.
As soon as he signs it, $250 million will be freed up. Roughly half of that will reimburse counties for their over budget, you know, salt provisions and trucks and all that jazz. And then the other roughly $115 million or so will be for fixing these gigantic potholes that are everywhere, but particularly in the Detroit area.
Oh, yeah. In Royal Oak, where we live, that one of the holes is so big it was classified as a sinkhole. Volkswagens have been known to disappear.
You have a new lake there, right?
Right, exactly. They're trying to fish out some of the smaller cars. Well, a small company that was making big waves electronically is a little company called Aereo, which came into Detroit last year. And they are the folks who put up antennas and gather the signals that are freely in the air, high-definition signals, and then allow people to subscribe to that service and get them sent back to them via their computers. CBS is taking a little exception to that.
And ABC and NBC, for that matter. I mean, they're trying to delay the inevitable. As we've talked before, everything is going mobile. Everybody wants to watch this smartphone, maybe not, but certainly on their tablet. They want to watch this stuff on the go. Mm-hmm. I heard that the Olympics, when they did the TV broadcast, that more people watch them on tablets than they actually watch them on TV.
Yep.
So, I mean, it's accelerating quickly, and these big networks are just bucking the trend. So anyway, the talk now is that CBS executives are saying that if Aereo wins the Supreme Court challenge, saying that they can do this, and you know, and the networks have challenged them, then CBS is going to go the way of Aereo, but we'll see. They have to go that way, but yeah. I don't know how much of this is court talk and how much.
Yeah, it's kind of saying to their local affiliates, hey, we'll just go on the internet and you guys won't get a cut of the action. Some of the action coming up, and this is what you do with MI Tech News, is let people know about events and gatherings that are coming up, and there's a big 2014 Michigan Robotics event coming up.
The University of Michigan North Campus Research Complex, they're being joined by the National Center for Manufacturing Science, and they're having a big robotics day on April 10th. You need to register by March 31st. All that information is at my website, mitechnews.com. I don't think there's a charge, but they just want to know you're coming. There's a lot of robotics activity going on in the state, professionally, manufacturing, students, everybody, because it ties in so nicely with manufacturing. I mean, if you go to a modern car plant these days, you don't really see that many people, but you see a heck of a lot of robots. So that's what this is all about.
And it's in the medical field. It's in many, many, many fields. But, folks, that's the kind of thing that you will find every Friday arriving on your computer, a complete rundown of not just these few stories. We're giving a little kind of sampler, hors d'oeuvres, if you will, from the MI Tech News report for this week. But you'll get this every Friday, and it covers everything from national, international stories on the state level, and then ones about events that are coming up. And also, we have another event coming up that you want to be aware of ahead of time. So if you're an entrepreneur, you can get there for that meeting, or you can find out about funding opportunities. There's all sorts of things that go on that Mike and is out there looking for you, and then putting all together in this neat little package called MI Tech News. And it arrives free to you, no cost. All you got to do is go to internetadvisor.net, scale down the page a little bit to the bottom there, and you can sign up for MI Tech News being delivered to you on a regular basis, that is every Friday, all the stories that are out there to help you keep up with the news and also to find out about great opportunities that are available for people, entrepreneurs in particular, in our state of Michigan. And by the way, some of the folks who support this program are ITA and New Horizons Computer Learning Centers, ITC, the nation's largest independent electricity transmission company, and Warner, Norcross, and Judd Attorneys at Law. Mike, let's wrap up with a group that is near and dear to both our hearts and a summer opportunity they have coming up.
Michigan Council of Women in Technology, Camp Infinity. Once again this summer for girls grades 4 through 7. If they're interested in science, technology, engineering, or math, this is the camp they want to be at. And they get plugged in with older women who are their mentors, and they do lots of fun things, and hoping that then these girls then want to pursue careers in all these areas, which are guaranteed jobs. I mean, we can't find enough people to fill these jobs now. There's just not enough trained people. So this is a wonderful thing if you have a daughter that's interested in this area to get her plugged into.
Absolutely. And Mike, thank you very much for making people aware of that opportunity that's out there. We love to support Michigan Council Women in Technology. Mike, thank you very much again for being with us, and head off and get to packing your bag for heading south to Florida.
Finally taking a vacation after 4 years, but I'll be calling in next week from some beach bar, and it'll be good.
So. Yeah, it's a gloat. Thanks, Mike. Yep. Glad to have you with us here again. Even if you're going to gloat like that about being at a tiki bar someplace. Mike Brennan with MITechNews.com. Again, on our homepage at internetadvisor.net. Scroll down the page and you'll find a way of subscribing to this free service. Well, in our studios, again, I'm going to bring them back for a little more conversation here. We have David Sweetman, who is a president and also one of the co-founders of MyLead.org, an organization that works with students in high school and develops leadership skills in them and then takes them on up into getting involved in college as well. And along those lines, we have with us as well from their team there, Heather Lake from Grand Valley State University in Grand Rapids, where she is a senior right now. Heather, thanks so much for being with us, too.
Thanks for having us.
David, I've noticed that social media plays a big role in this, and Heather, I think you're somewhat of an expert on this social media end or on the technology end of it. Talk a little bit about how you use that to develop leadership.
Right now, we use it in a majority of different ways, even for some of our planning sessions, which we internally have to do in order to plan our conferences. We use different software like Google Hangout. We use
a lot. Google Plus?
Yeah. Right. It helps because we are so far apart, we might have someone over in Flint, and I'm in Grand Rapids, and David's way out here on the east side. Mm-hmm. So it helps to be able to see everyone, because being an organization, you might see each other once or twice a year, and so you don't feel that connection.
It's interesting. I'm seeing many more podcasts now on, I forget his name now, but Tom Merritt has started a new one called Daily Tech News, and it's all done on a Google Plus Hangout. Mm-hmm. Which, by the way, for folks, you may not be aware of it, but if you're Google Plus, is kind of like Facebook, but with a lot many more tools in many ways, especially for that group thing where you can get a number of people on. You see their faces as you're talking with them. It's kind of like almost like a
video conferencing for free.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's wonderful. So, and there's cloud-based collaboration tools that you use as well, right?
Yeah, that's part of the Google Suite. So documents, spreadsheets, things like that, if you're working in an office setting, you have that, here's this office environment. But when we're across the state, how can we collaborate on those documents even concurrently at the same time as we're sitting there talking in our meetings? And those tools allow us to do
Heather,
that.
I'm curious. We were talking during the break about this, that right now it's among the three of you and Ish and Samantha. Ish is outnumbered, and I understand that in terms of the kids who are involved, the young people who are involved in MyLead.org, it's like a majority of women.
It is. It's very...
Why is that?
I would think that it has to do with the representation of the population, and kind of there are a lot of very, very strong women right now that are leading some
Excellent.
Of their things in school. So
I'm delighted.
I'm really excited to see that coming up, and then we do have some awesome talent like Ish that come through as well. So it's a pretty good dynamic.
So guys are also randish, I'm sorry, you know, it's like, so and you too.
So if you're a young man, a sophomore going into a junior in high school, and you want to know where the girls are, okay, just trying to understand why people might want to do this.
We're running out of time, David. I want you to give me a chance. How do people get in touch with MyLead.org?
Okay, so if you're a high school sophomore, or know someone who is, that's our target for these conference experiences, and contact your high school counselor. The nomination Excellent. Process for how students get to MyLead is through those high schools. If you're that contact at the high school.
And it's free to the high schools. The first one.
Yeah, the first student, and they can send up to three additional students. Excellent. That's $165 each, which just covers the cost of the
And that
the
conference is coming
materials.
Up when? The MyLead.org conference?
Middle of May and middle of June.
Okay, again, folks, we have links to this on our homepage where you can find out more about it and find out about that process getting involved. I want to thank you all very much for being with us. Heather and Ish and Samantha, thanks for coming in, and thank you very much, and the best to you. I want to follow up and see how these things go after the conference,
all right? Thank you for having us.
Second hour, we're going to solve your problem.
You're listening to a podcast of the Internet Advisor. To see the show notes for this program, visit our homepage at www.internetadvisor.net. That's where you'll also find past podcasts, our toolkit full of free software to clean up your computer and keep it running strong, plus other resources. If you have a question for our hosts, just click the contact form on the homepage and send us an email with the details. Don't forget to look for us on Facebook. Now let's get back to the second hour of the Internet Advisor.
Hi there, folks. Thank you for allowing us into your lives with this second hour of the Internet Advisor. I'm Foster Brown, and with me in studio, Gary Baker, who's been with me here from the beginning. Over 16 years, we've been on the air answering your questions about the Internet and about your computers. And that's what we get to do this second hour. And with us, of course, is an experienced computer tech, Mr. Ed Rudell, who is also going to pitch in and help answer some questions. We've got some callers that we're going to be talking with about their problems and about the emails that folks like you send in. For those of you who may have listened to the Internet Advisor for a few years, you know that hour number two is the one we dedicate to answering your questions. As a matter of fact, Gary Baker, my co-host, is here in the studio with me, and Ed Riddell. That's kind of where Gary and I began. I had a question that I had for him. He was my ISP at the time with online technology.
Online technology.
That's right. Online technologies. And I had a question about my modem and everything else. And when I had him on my show, which was the Great Weekend Show on JR in 1998, it turned into a full segment because there were all sorts of people that had questions like that.
Imagine that. You know, it might have been hard. But that was back when we had the modem screeches.
Oh, my Lord. Squirrels were literally chewing up our connections.
That's an inside joke because Foster had a problem. And we figured out that it had to be somewhere in the line from the pole to the house. And it was.
It was.
And
exactly,
the squirrels eating the insulation off the line.
Yep. And Ed, you have done a lot of tech answering of questions as well. And so, folks, the way we usually do this, either we have on our flagship station WJR when we're live there and not preempted by sports, has been happening over the winter and into the spring right now. Very soon we'll be back on with our 2 hours of live programs, probably beginning in the month of April. But right now, the best way to get your questions to us is through our internetadvisor.net site. There's a contact us form there. You simply click on that, put in your email, and with a question, and zoom, it gets off to us. And one of the people who emailed us this week was Larry Reznick. Larry, are you with us right now?
Yes, I am.
We're rolling down the highway with you, I understand.
Yes, yes, we're headed to Ann Arbor.
Ah, the seat of all wisdom and learning, as Gary will tell us, right? And home for the Wolverines as well. Thanks for being with us, Larry. You sent us an email this week about printing from your tablet. Is it from your computer or from a tablet? Where are you printing from?
We were trying to print from a Samsung tablet.
Okay, from a tablet. And you had downloaded an application to do that kind of printing wirelessly, right?
Yes, that's correct. I actually found an app for the Epson printer, and that's what I downloaded.
Okay, so, and you have an Epson printer in your house, right?
Correct.
Okay, now, the problem you encountered was that when you tried to use that application to get to your printer, it said, nope, you can only print to a Samsung printer, which is a lot.
That is correct.
Even though it was an Epson app. Okay, so I'm going to bring Ed into the conversation here because you and he have shared some information, too.
And this has been a big drawback with tablets and phones for a while, is that they do not seem to have the hooks in the operating system that allows you to define a printer and then set that as your default.
Right.
So they have predefined printers, and it's specific to a manufacturer. So if you were to buy an HP tablet, it's only going to print to an HP. If you buy a Samsung, only to Samsung printers. But what the manufacturers have done is they provided applets, as Larry has discussed, and you could download that app. But in order to print from it, you have to launch the app and then tell it what application that you wish to print from. So you do it just the opposite. So instead of being in the application and selecting, I wish to print, for some reason, the manufacturers say you only can print to this device. They only have one default device you could print to.
Wow.
Until they fix that, the only way you can correct that is you launch the application, and then it will tell you which applications are running, and of those applications, which ones you could possibly select and do a screen capture and print. Does that sound about right, Gary?
You're absolutely right, Ed. And, you know, it's amazing because today, especially with so many wireless printers out there, and even if it were wired, it's on your local area network, if you will, inside your home. You would think that this would be fairly easy for them to do, would just be to put print drivers onto the laptop, even if you had to download them for the particular device. It's not that easy with the tablet.
It is not, and it's the same thing with your iPad, too, isn't it?
That's right.
It could be
same
just
thing.
As difficult.
So, Larry,
a lot of web-based printing capabilities where you can actually print to a website or email a page to a website, and then it goes to your IP-based printer. I mean, HP printers seem to have the upper edge on that in that you can sometimes email something to your printer.
So, Larry, have you had any success trying the workarounds?
Yes, I did. First thing I did was reload the Samsung app again, and it went through its little process. It did find a printer, and it came up with a little menu board of documents emails, various things, photos.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I had to do is I tried printing a picture. I brought the picture up, but then I had to actually kind of load it in to the system, and then I told it to print, and it worked.
Okay.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, and Larry just clarified what I was trying to say before. I said you have to select what applications. He's correct. I misspoke. You have to hopefully already have the document on there and that the application can understand, the printing application can understand what type of document, photo, email that mm-hmm. you wish to print. But it's usually something that's saved on your computer. Thanks for clarifying that, Larry.
So then, Larry, you were able to then reinstall the Epson printer application. Is that it?
Yes, but it does have limitations. For example, if we wanted to do some email or something like that, it's not possible. But I found another app that would work better.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, you can only print from Gmail on that one.
All right, Larry, hang on a second. We're coming to a break here. Could you hang on the phone for us for just about 5 minutes more? Because I want to hear from you what your experience was and how you worked around it. And we'll get to that in just a moment. We're going to take a quick pause. When we come back, Larry Reznik's with us. We're talking about a challenge that more and more people have is how to print from your tablet to the printer in your home. In this part of the Internet Advisor, we're delighted to be able to tackle problems that you folks have sent in. And we're talking right now with one of our listeners who used the Contact Us form and got his question to us. Larry Reznik is with us. And Larry, thank you again for being with us. Hands-free, we might add, for anybody as you travel to Ann Arbor. Thanks so much for joining us again.
Oh, glad to be here.
Now, Larry, you had a challenge, and that was to how to print from your tablet, which was a Samsung tablet, to your printer, which was an Epson printer, and it wasn't working initially. You did, however, find a workaround. And could you just kind of quickly again go through the steps that you used to get to your Epson printer and successfully print?
Okay. Well, the first thing I wanted to do was to find out if there were any apps that would work. So I went to the Google App Store and typed in printing from a tablet. And it gave me a couple of selections. I found that I could find the app for the Epson printer, which I tried first, and then eventually I found another one that was called Printer Share.
Printer Share.
And I downloaded that one. First I did the free one, and that one just basically lets you make a connection to see if you can print.
Mm-hmm.
It just prints out a sheet of various different colors.
I got you.
And then from there, I bought the app.
How much did it cost, Larry?
It was $12.95.
Okay.
And I'm trying to remember now. I think it comes from a place called Dynamic.
Okay. You can maybe
more.
But basically, you go into the Google Play Store, if you're on an Android device, which would the Samsung tablet would be, and then you can look for this Printer Share. And that was the one that eventually, for roughly $13, let you get through to print on your machine. And it's worth it, I think, well worth it, to pay that price.
Yeah, actually, I use my iPad, and I print to an HP printer at home, and that works great, because mm-hmm. you just use an app called ePrint
right.
from HP. And you can also print to public internet or public printers that are in hotels or other places using the same app if okay. they have the
and
capability
HP.
To
and,
do that.
And Ed, as you were saying before, HP does very well at this. And one of the reasons they have an HP printer, they've always been very good at that connectivity.
Well, that's true. And the ability to email to a specific address and then have it come to your PC is like magic.
Oh, so, okay. Another good aspect of that. But, Larry, the problem you had was you had a Samsung printer and an Epson, pardon me, a Samsung tablet and an Epson printer. Now, once you use PrinterShare, how did it work?
Oh, it worked well. It found the printer, which is, you know, one of the things, I guess, that's good about it, because no matter where you go, if you may not be home and you are at another printer, you can start the app and it'll go through and you can find the printer and hook into it and then use it. it worked. I tried a couple of different things, photos and documents, and I also did an email, but I for it to do the email, it has to go through Gmail. So
yeah.
first I had to go to our email and actually forward something to Gmail, and then I was able to print it out through Gmail.
So right now you're kind of forced to do a lot of workarounds, but you can make it work, right?
That's correct.
Yeah, well, and that's
we'll
good
also
news.
Do a web print. You can go out to the website and print that too.
That's excellent. So if you're on a web page, you see something you like, right. You can select it, and then you can print that. That's a very nice feature for those of you who want to have a hard copy of something. Well, Larry, I want you to keep your eyes on the road. We appreciate you as a listener, and we appreciate sending that question in because more and more people. I don't know if you heard Mike Brennan on My Tech News segment saying that the Olympics, the Sochi Olympics, were watched primarily on tablets. So tablets are becoming an incredibly important way that people have of both getting on the internet and now wanting to be able to print. And you've given us a pretty good idea. That was an app called PrinterShare. You'll find that in the Google Play Store. And it cost you $12.95, basically, to be able to print. And if that's something that's important for you, you got it there. Larry, thanks so much for giving us a call.
Okay, well, I'm glad to be on the show. I don't listen to you folks all the time, but whenever I get a chance, I do. And you really come up with some great information.
Well, you know something, and I want to thank you as a listener for using that Contact Us button to get your question in here because you're able to get a number of people commenting, but also you're helping a lot of people out when you call us when we get to talk with you here on the phone. So, Larry, thanks again for being with us.
All right, thank you.
All right, Ed?
You know, I just wanted to make a comment. This is one of the things I have a lot of. It must be a generational thing because a lot of people that I work with, they say, you have a tablet. What do you need to print for? It's right there. And I'm like, no, I need a hard copy. I would like a hard copy, either because I am old-fashioned, or I need to print this out so I can provide it to my lawyer because they need it signed, or something
right,
like that.
Right.
I'm on vacation. I need to print it out. I want to. People just don't understand. And this whole concept of not providing a native printing capability on tablets drives me nuts.
Yeah, that's a very good point you bring up. That's a very good point.
And it's because we have these 20-somethings, you know, they're 24, 25 years old, coming out of college, they're designing these things, and they just don't have the experience. It's a tablet. Why would you need to print?
Well, I think they got to make something for everyone, not just maybe their generation or somebody that doesn't feel they need to print. Right?
Well, you know, the other thing, too, is it's interesting. This kind of ties into something I heard in a commentary I listened to this week about news and how people consume news. And that what's happening, and it's a big challenge for people who put news out, is that a younger generation, let's say 24 to maybe late 30s, and a little bit younger than that, consume news in small bites. They only want to see like a headline and a few sentences to describe something, and then they move on. So a lot of these, like a flipboard. Mm-hmm. They want to see that little bit of taste of it. And if they want more, they can click into it.
But I thought that was called ADD.
That's in our generation. That's what they call it.
We call it ADD from our perspective. From their perspective, it's just that's how they look at the world.
Okay.
So that, I think, may have an effect in our whole business about printing as well. That I don't want to have. Like I went in just preparing for the program. I was looking at an article about Tim Berners-Lee, and it was a rather long interview with him. Well, I liked to see that whole thing as he developed his thought.
Yeah,
but it took a while to read on the tablet, and
some people are like that, and it's very enjoyable to read. It just takes a while to consume it.
And a lot of the browsers have got this bookmarking where you can read it later, or you can even with like Chrome, you can put it in a special mode where you see just the story, and it gets rid of the rest of it. If you have Evernote as your note saver, they have I think it's called Clearly is the name of the app that you can get with it for free, which lets you just see the article
itself.
So
this doesn't bode very well for the Wall Street Journal or the Economist.
That's interesting. and that was interesting.
Because I read them before the well-developed, lot longer article than just a few sound bites.
That's exactly it. And it is a challenge. But I think it is the New York Times, they were saying, as one of the first of the traditional newspapers that has very successfully made the migration to the net, the internet, where they have been able to live in both worlds and continue to produce those long-form articles. I know that, for instance, with my Apple TV, I can read stuff from the Wall Street Journal, or I should say, I can watch stories in length.
Right.
I watched some great interviews from Bloomberg as well.
That's right.
At length again. So it's kind of a compromise. You're not reading the hard copy so much, but you're getting a full look at a topic.
Although I will tell you, I was so surprised that I found a magazine on the counter this morning. My daughter is now looking at Bloomberg Business Week, and I'm thinking, what's going on?
What have I created?
Who is
this monster?
And it's she's got a subscription. You know, that's I looked at the front. I said, where did this come from? Because I look at that stuff online usually.
Yeah.
I like, you know, it's the whole Kiplinger letter concept.
Oh, yeah.
Remember Kiplinger?
Mm-hmm.
You know, short sound bites. But then, you know, today, drill in deeper. So you don't have to go anywhere to find the rest of the story. Just dig in deeper, right? That's
right.
What the hypertext linking that we're celebrating the 25th
anniversary of, allows you to do that deeper dive. Hey, coming up in just a minute, we're going to be talking with one of our listeners about how to watch free movies online. So I'm getting some advice and some good advice about how to do that and how to be doing that very carefully.
To the Internet Advisor. Once again, your hosts, Foster Brown, Gary Baker, and Ed Rudell.
Welcome to hour number two of the Internet Advisor. My name is Foster Brown, Gary Baker, and Ed Rudell in studio here, and we're doing what we love to do, which is to get in touch with you folks, our listeners, and the best way to do that. And by the way, I want to talk to you who are listening to us and our affiliates around the state of Michigan. We don't want you cut out of the conversation. We want you involved as well. And if you have a question, and don't think you've got a question that's too simple. Now, the only question we say are dumb questions are the ones you don't ask. Very often, asking a simple question, like the one we're going to be talking about in just a moment, is very important to a lot of people. And when we get a chance to interact with you and answer those questions, we answer it for a lot of folks. So at the times when we don't have the ability to take live calls, that is a great time for you to get on to our internetadvisor.net website. Go to Contact Us, click on that button, and send us your question. Like the Carr family, who have a question about watching free movies online. And that's becoming a bigger and bigger thing for people who have tablets and have laptops and enjoy being someplace. And or even nowadays, you can pop it over to your TV and stream it there. And it's a great way of getting it. So we have Dorothy Carr with us. Hi, Dorothy. How are you doing?
Just fine.
Thank you so much for sending us the email about watching free movies online, because as I said, it's become a really big deal. When did this become a big deal for you folks?
We just discovered it a couple months ago.
Mm. And what are the fun things you like to watch online?
Oh, I like Anna Green Gables, so they're kind of hard to find hers.
Yeah.
We watched this one, Dreamfield, about immigrants that came here. And my husband likes a lot of history stuff and war stuff. I don't care for the war stuff, but we like family movies without a lot of sex or vulgar. And something that after watching them, might improve your life, not just something.
Right. You know. I really like the way you put that. That is a great way of putting it. So and the beautiful thing about it now is there's so much stuff out there that you can do that kind of thing. You can pinpoint the kind of thing that you want to watch. So your question to us was this, that when you go to watch free movies online, some of the sites tell you that you need to update your video player or something like that, right?
Right.
And that's kind of scary, isn't it?
Yes. Because I don't want to mess up my computer.
All right. And, Ed, that's a serious consideration, isn't it?
It is, and it really depends. I mean, it depends how you – if you go to a trusted site, like if you are a Hulu's user.
Right.
That almost came out Hulu loser. But if you're a Hulu user
or Netflix.
Well, I don't want to be a loser.
No, that's good for you, and we don't want to be a loser.
Smart woman, Dorothy.
Then I would trust the source. That this is a company. It's probably going to be a Fortune 500 company if it's not already. If they said I need to update my plugins or my movie plugins, I would probably do that for a mainstream one.
Now, one of the things, by the way, that Dorothy said, excuse me, just quickly.
Now, when he says mainstream, how do I know what is mainstream? What is?
Good question.
Well, I mean, for us, we're around it. So, Gary, can you name off five or six legitimate sites? I mean, there was Hulu, Netflix.
I'm too busy watching popcorn flicks.
Netflix,
you've got
to sign up for. Okay. Yeah.
Okay, so these are ones they most of them provide. Some of them provide free, like Hulu provides free, but if you can get a paid subscription, Netflix is always paid,
and it's about $8 a month.
Right.
So I have a slightly different opinion.
Okay.
Because, you know, I'm watching popcorn flicks right now. Right?
Okay.
Oh,
something that you were. You and I were watching on the break. So that, you know, looks like a pretty legitimate site.
Could you spell that again for the folks and for Dorothy's sake?
It's just Popcorn Flicks. Popcorn, F-L-I-X.
.com?
Okay. And they're free. But because they're free, they've got to make money somehow, mm-hmm. right? They have to have advertising, which they do, or something else. And if they came, if there was a pop-up that said, upgrade your video viewer,
mm-hmm.
I'm not sure I would do it.
Yeah.
Because they have to have, again, some way to make some money. They may be partnering with somebody who wants to put something in that viewer. I want my viewer clean. I'm going to go back
to... And it might be, for instance, something as quote-unquote innocent as a toolbar.
They're
not putting malware on there, Dorothy, but they want to, if you will, clutter up your browser with all sorts of stuff.
Right. But, and that's a good point. So what... Your PC uses like three or four pieces of software to view movies: Microsoft Silverlight,
right?
Adobe Flash Player, and Java mm-hmm. would be the third one. And the first Java and the Adobe Flash Player are usually configured to automatically update.
Yeah,
and they both have control panel entries. So if you go to your Windows control panel, you'll see you have a Java entry in there. And
the Adobe,
and those you can go in there and say update now,
but okay. shouldn't they automatically update?
But like I'm saying, they usually configure to automatically update.
They try. I always make sure that I control when something comes on my computer, so I say just notify me.
Dorothy, what tablet are you using, or how are you looking at these movies?
I just have a computer. I don't have.
So it's on your computer. No, that's a good point.
So what site are you using to watch movies, as an example?
You mean which browser?
Well, you're obviously using a web browser, but you're going to a website to watch these movies online.
We've checked a lot of them. We've gotten several on YouTube.
Okay.
Oh, yeah, YouTube.
At YouTube, we forgot to mention. That's a great place to go for free ones. Right?
And we found maybe a few on a lot of these, but some of them that haven't had us make us download something.
Yeah, now you come to a very important point, Dora, that you made in your email here. You're a little leery, probably because of what we've been saying all this time, about downloading stuff from these sites that are not necessarily trusted.
Yeah, because my computer's supposed to be updating things by itself without me adding something to it.
And like we replied in the email, I'll find a video link, and my kids will do this. They're on campus, and they know that they can go to this one website and watch Sherlock Holmes or Doctor Who episodes a week before they're released here in the United States, if not 3 months before they're released in the United States. But when they go there, that website is going to say, you need to update your plugin, your media player plugin for your browser, so that you can watch this movie. And my kids don't touch it, and they just sit there. And then after maybe 30 seconds, the movie still loads.
Really?
You're just getting a bogus advertisement that comes up. Now, but not how are you going to determine that?
Okay.
I'll tell you, both my kids messed up their computer until they figured that out. So I tell them not to go to those websites.
Then you go back to an old saw, Dorothy, that sounds like you'll understand, and I know the guys in it. There is no free lunch, okay? You get what you pay for. And more I find, now this is my opinion, more and more I find that if I'm on a site that I don't pay anything for, I am actually going to pay if I have to download something for it, because I'm going to have to watch out every step I make.
And every click you make.
Oh, every click you make.
That should be a song. Every click.
What happens if you don't have to download anything? You find a movie you can watch without downloading anything.
That's fine.
Then you have got the proper, Ed went through that there. You've got either a Microsoft Silverlight or you've got the Adobe Flash Player or the Java. It's all being updated in the background. That means those are legitimate tools to watch this. Also, for instance, what operating system are you working on?
Windows 7.
Windows 7. You might have there's a MS. So is there a media player? Do you have a media player from Microsoft on your machine?
I'm sure I do.
Yeah, that media player probably, if it can be played through there, it's legitimate. I would not. Yes, I do.
Yes, I do.
Good. Okay. I would just personally say, don't go to those free sites because there's so much of a risk.
Well, I mean, but there's a lot of sites out there that are free and you may not even know it. So if you're a cable subscriber through Comcast or WOW and you happen to get HBO, guess what? You're eligible to download the HBO To Go application.
We don't have that. I'm using AT&T. That's all we have. It comes in on the phone line.
Okay. Well, you don't have that.
I'm just saying for other listeners.
A lot of the networks as well, CBS, ABC, NBC, all have their, you can go watch episodes of The Mentalist or whatever else you want through those different networks. They are offering it, and you'll see them through safe and secure viewers. So the point I guess I make is that I buy Netflix, and I'm an Amazon Prime user. And both of those mean that I can safely watch a ton of videos from everything under the sun. You can also go to things like National Geographic, the science channels. I mean, there's just a ton of things out there, depending on your interest, that you can go to. Like your husband loves the history. Go to the History Channel. I bet you could stream a ton of stuff safely off of the History Channel, free.
HistoryChannel.net.
If you're a member of Netflix, right?
No. I think that a lot of the network and a lot of these individual channels, you don't have to necessarily belong to or pay for those other services.
So you're saying going to CBS?
A big part?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, we've never tried that.
Yeah, go to like the CBS, NBC, ABC, and you know, History Channel,
PBS,
National Geographic, PBS, all those traditional things that you've heard about. A lot of they're providing movies for streaming.
Yeah, great.
My wife will come home an hour late from work or be out, and she's missed her family movie that she wants to, and she can watch it that night at midnight if she wants.
You can go on to the networks. We don't have any. We've run out of time here, but Dorothy, I hope we've given you some options and some warnings too.
Can I ask one question?
Oh, I can't. I tell you what, I have to take you offline. I'll take that question and I'll repeat it when we come back.
Okay.
Or just hold on. Matter of fact, let's do that. Just hold on a second, and when we come after this break, ask another question too, because you've got some very good questions here. We'll be back with Dorothy in just a moment to talk a little bit more about movies and how you can watch them and enjoy them on your tablets, your laptops, and on your computers as well, safely. And that is the key. Back in just a moment. Before we go a minute further, I want to thank Shannon Maley, our engineer, for doing a great job juggling a couple of things, producing and engineering for us today here on the Internet Advisor. And again, we're talking with one of our folks who's a listener out there, Dorothy Carr, and has a very practical problem that I think is something that a lot of people are dealing with, and that's how to watch free movies safely on your computer, laptop, tablet, phone, whatever it may be. And we're talking about some of the different ways of getting at that. And thank you, Dorothy, by the way, for being with us. Now, you had a further question you wanted to ask about this, so go ahead and ask that question.
So, in summary, are you saying if I go to a site and I don't have to download anything or sign up for anything, that I can consider it safe?
Well, let me qualify that, because you used the last thing, sign up for anything. You don't want to necessarily have to download anything special to watch it. I think that's probably more the key, guys. Do you think?
Okay.
Because sometimes you have to stop. For instance, we were just talking about this in the break. If you happen to be a Comcast customer, they have something called Xfinity. Well, because you're a customer, you've already, quote-unquote, signed up for it. And therefore, you have access to a lot of free stuff that they have there to see.
Yeah, it's quite possible, as we were saying, that AT&T offers something as well for
and
their
WOW
subscribers.
And I'm going to the other ones that are out there. There's a ton of them that you're on out there. So
really?
Your cable network, if you go to AT&T.
Cable or DSL, you know.
Right. Cable or DSL may have some stuff that you can watch for free on there. And you can just go to your att.net. And use your account number and then find out what it is that you can watch there. The other thing is that there are things like Yahoo and AOL. And what are some of the other places, guys, you might find some video for watch free? Because so many. Mentioned the networks.
Well, Popcorn Flicks was one.
PopcornFlix.com.
And then you can also go to Google or play.google.com. That's a Google provides not only purchased movies, but every month they also offer free movies.
And then also, Dorothy, while you're there, you mentioned YouTube. YouTube is another great place. And if you've got those basics, you mentioned before, you're on Windows 7, and so you've, I don't know if you have Microsoft Silverlight with that, do they?
Yes, I think I do.
Okay. You want to make sure that that's updated, but that should update automatically in the background.
Yes.
And
right.
Then the other thing is the Adobe Flash Player and Java. And even if you've got it set to say, hey, tell me if you're going to update, you'll see those come through, and you can just pass those on. Those are safe. But when you go to a website and it says, oh, a free family movie, if you download our browser or our viewer or whatever it is, I would turn tail and run from those.
What happens if they ask me to, like, my name and password and all this stuff? Are they, what are they going to do with that?
Well, why would they? There'd be no reason to ask you for a password unless you subscribe to that site and paying customer, or you find it that you're like with AT&T.
A lot of them will say, you know, we'll give you a free week, but they want your information. So after the end of the week,
of course
they'll charge
they do.
You if you don't cancel. But I don't want to give them my information.
I understand. Well,
so what you're looking for is a lot of free stuff, and you don't want to pay anything.
Yeah.
And so what we have is we should probably come up with a list of safe sites.
You know, that's a very good idea, and we've gotten a head started on it, I think, today, but that's a good idea for our website. Folks, what we try to do, especially with our site, is to provide you with packages of things like that, and we depend on you folks out there as well to give us that information. If you've run into something, you're one of our greatest resources. So if you know of some safe places you can go that you don't have to sign up for anything, and that is to become a paying customer to watch it, and that it doesn't require extra downloads, go to internetadvisor.net and go into that contact form and share that information with us, and we'll make sure to put it together. But we've mentioned some places like the networks like ABC and CBS, mm-hmm. NBC, and then the various channels that you'll find often, like the History Channel.
We never thought of any of those.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
National Geographic and a lot of those ones. Now, they may ask you for a username and to create a password for them, and that's quite all right. And you can... You know, choose a new one for each one of those and write it down someplace and keep it, or a password keeper. But they're not going to, but they want to collect information on you. Yes. Everywhere you go, the information is money and they want to collect that. But they will not necessarily ask for money, nor will they ask to load anything on your computer. And anytime anybody says, oh, you got to use this, you have to load this on your computer to see my stuff, I say, bye-bye, and I'm gone.
Thank you guys so much.
Don't want to go anywhere near that. So you've asked a very, very good question. I think you started us down the road. Let us know, by the way, how this works out for you guys as you look for these different sources of free movies to watch, and really high-quality movies nowadays on a lot of these free sources.
Yeah, but the old ones are really good.
Yep, you're absolutely right. By the way, I will say, and now, Gary, are you a Netflix customer?
No.
I am not.
You're not, okay. Yeah. But Amazon Prime?
Amazon Prime, I am.
Okay, Eddie, what are you? Either one of those?
I'm free.
Eddie doesn't go subscribe to anyone.
No.
And I subscribe to both. I was subscribed to Netflix, and I also subscribed to Amazon Prime. But I tell you, I ran into some really neat, we love British detective series, and we ran into some great ones that were on YouTube. Like one called 54th Parallel, which great detective series out of England. I couldn't find it anywhere else. It was on YouTube. And the other was, there was a series of British detective movies we wanted to watch. They were all subtitled in Danish. So if you can get over the Danish subtitles, you can still watch it because you're hearing it in English and while watching the rest of it. So there's a lot of good stuff out there and free in these different places. But you asked a great question. Thanks so much, Dorothy.
Thank you.
All right. Take care of yourself. Well, that is a good example of somebody who is a listener helping us out by asking an excellent kind of a question. Has your online movie viewing expanded since you began to find some of these places, Gary?
Not really. I don't watch many movies and watch TV at all. So I don't have the time usually to do it.
Yeah, and I'm the same way. I really don't watch that much online TV. I mean, unless something catches my attention. You know, tickles my funny bone.
But now there's some series on like this, what's it called? Something Black? Orange is the New Black, which is on Amazon Prime, I believe. Mm-hmm. And on Netflix, excuse me, Shannon's correcting me here. That is a great new series apparently coming out. House of Cards is another one that was produced solely by Netflix.
I must have missed that generation. So it was your generation, Foster. It skipped Gary's and I.
Yeah,
and then everyone younger than me is the DVR people. They just love the DVR.
And my son likes sports.
Now they
sports,
can do it real time.
So I watch sports with him, right? Yeah. And we can watch lacrosse through ESPN because we're an Xfinity, a Comcast customer, right? And so that's what we do.
We watch
on his tablet when we're out someplace.
I'm a big soccer fan, and I have yet to find a good source for that. I know Xfinity has NBC Sports on it, and that's they were right. the ones who took over a lot of the sports yep. that was there. Mm-hmm. But it's very hard for me to find good soccer games, and I still have to hunting for that. Anybody out there with a suggestion? If you love soccer,
yeah, please,
please give me an email. Contact us for. I have found this is kind of interesting. Our viewing has expanded because with Apple AirPlay, mm-hmm. I have an Apple TV there. It right. allows me with the Maverick system on the Apple now, their upper OS X 10 point, I forget what it is. I can simply, from my iPhone, I can find a program that I'm watching there, and I can click play on your TV or AirPlay, and it goes, boom, right onto my TV.
You know, that's right. a subject we didn't even breach with our last caller, was getting like yep. an Apple TV or Roku.
Roku Slim, now, like you mentioned.
The Roku yes. Slim is great,
yeah.
too.
Yeah, Ed mentioned that, what, last week we mentioned.
So
yeah,
this is a whole new frontier.
Now, it won't work on a black and white TV, but it will work on a modern LCD TV.
You have moved up from a black and white, have you?
Yeah, you're...
Yeah. Oh, please tell me you have. But if you have a TV, one of the flat screens that's capable, a smart TV, or one that's capable of with an HDMI input,
yep.
and you have an Apple TV or a Roku.
There's a lot of free content
there.
There's
a ton of stuff that you can just throw it. As somebody said, throw it. Gary, you use that phrase.
That's
just
right.
kind of throw it from your iPad or from your Samsung tablet or from your iPhone or even from your Samsung phone. Throw it right onto the TV and watch it there. Check those things out too, folks. That's another great way of expanding your TV viewing and maybe even getting to the legendary place of being able to cut the cable. Well, Gary and Ed, it's been good talking with you. Had a lot of fun with our listeners. Thank you so much to Dorothy, who is with us, and to Larry as well, who joined us here on our Internet Advisor Show. My name is Foster Brown, and on behalf of Gary Baker and Ed Rudell and Shannon Maley, our engineer, thank you so much for allowing us into your lives with our programs. And don't forget, you can get in contact with us 24/7 through our Contact Us button at InternetAdvisor.net. And don't forget to sign up for MyTechNews.com on our page. It's absolutely free and a lot of good information.
You've been listening to a podcast of the Internet Advisor Show, Detroit's longest-running, locally produced computer show with Foster Brown, Gary Baker, and their team of experts. For more information about our weekly show, to ask a question of our experts, or to find the show notes for this podcast, visit www.internetadvisor.net and look for us on Facebook. Thanks for listening.